Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. So many of us face so many challenges these days. Figuring out our personal mission, staying on purpose, working with colleagues with greater joy and harmony, dealing with the partisan divide that's splitting our families and our communities. We have with us a guest today who offers a solution to all these challenges and more. Marion Head worked with a group of people over 20 years to develop what she calls the Revolutionary Agreements, a set of principles that can help guide us to live our lives with greater joy and harmony at home, at work, and in our communities. Marion is the author of a book entitled The Revolutionary Agreements, in which she explains the 12 principles that she has used successfully for decades and has shared with many groups successfully over years, and that we can apply in our lives at home and at work. She joins us today to explain the 12 principles and to talk about how we can apply them in our lives. Marion Head, welcome to All Together Now.
Thank you, Eleanor. I'm so happy to be here with you.
Yes. So I'd like to start the show where you explain fully what the 12 revolutionary agreements are, and after we get through explaining those, then talk about how we can apply it to get along with our families, particularly with Thanksgiving coming up. And I know a lot of families, including my husband's, you know, split along the political divisions, and then talk a little bit about how we can apply these agreements in our work situations with nonprofit organizations or business or wherever we are working now. Does that sound good to you?
That sounds great, Eleanor. I'm delighted to be able to share this with your listening audience.
And just before we get into describing the 12 agreements, can you just tell a little bit for our listeners, how did the revolutionary agreements come into being?
Sure. So back in the mid-'80s, my husband was president of something called the Win-Win Business Forum in Boulder, Colorado, where we lived. And every week, people would come together to look at how we could have businesses. Now, in the 80s, this was kind of revolutionary, that where our employees won, and our vendors, and our customers, and the business did too, and the owners, and so on. So in that environment, there were business owners who came together at his invitation, my husband's invitation to our home, to go deeper and ask each other, how can we really support one another in living our highest values in all aspects of our lives, and especially at work where we spent most of our time? Out of that first gathering, a set of agreements was produced to help guide us along that road. And then that group just wound up meeting again the next month and the next month and the next month for the next 20 years. And at the beginning of each of
you
these
meant every
gatherings,
month for 20 years.
Yeah, 20 years. And it wasn't a membership organization, and there was no obligation, and it wasn't the same people all the time. There was a core. Mm-hmm. But that group, which we dubbed Geneva Group, just we just loved that one day a month of coming together, taking the day off, and starting each meeting by reading the agreements aloud and then talking about how they were positively influencing our lives and the lives of those that we worked with and lived with in our communities. So over the years, Eleanor, those agreements evolved as we evolved. And then when I decided to share them with the world through writing the book, I dubbed them revolutionary agreements. And the revolutionary agreements are really the essence. They're my version of the essence of the Geneva Group agreements. So they're simple, but when applied, they're really profoundly powerful in how they can enrich our relationships and give us greater peace in our lives.
Fantastic story, and I love that your guiding question at the outset was how do we live our highest and best selves, and that those principles emerged from that, and that you've been using them ever since over decades. So I am very excited to share your principles with our listeners today so they can use it to be their highest and best selves. So why don't we kind of take it from the top, and you can explain each of the 12 agreements.
Sure, Ellen, I'm happy to. Well, when the the essence of those agreements came forth. The agreements self-organized into three what I call pillars of a good life: truth, acceptance, and gratitude. T-A-G, like tag, you're it. I'm it too. And so in the area of truth, there are four agreements. In each of the area, there are four agreements. And the first one in truth is I agree to live my mission. Now, this is really different from achieving a mission, which many of us are driven to or called to live our purpose. This is really about identifying the essence of our mission and then living that essence daily. And I think given that we're going to share more in the second part of your show about how these are applied to organizations, nonprofits, there was quite a historic conference that these were applied to at the end of the Cold War with the Soviets and Americans, that I will share that in the second half of this show, how these agreements turned a dysfunctional into a highly functional team with great results. So the second agreement in truth is I agree to speak my truth with compassion.
Well, before you move on to that, on the I agree to live my mission, that presumes that people know what their mission is. And I think there may be quite a few people out there who might not know their mission.
Show
so right there, they might get stuck. How do we help get through that to get the clarity of, like, what is my true purpose being here?
Yeah, well, you know, I can say how to start doing that is to ask yourself, what do you love to do? And what gives you the greatest joy? Because that's what pulls us forward. That's what gives us juice. And, you know, everybody's function on Earth is different. We are all unique. I see us all as, sometimes I think of us as cells in the body of humanity. And each of us has a different function. And so, you know, are you a seer? Are you a hearer? Are you a listener? You know, are you a speaker? You know, do you love to hold children? I mean, there's each one of us is unique. So we start by peeling the layers of the onion and going, well, what do I want?
Yeah, that's great. And I find it fascinating that you start by saying, I agree to live my mission, because I think there's so many people who either don't know what their mission is, or they know what it is, but they feel like it's too far away from where their lives are now. So they kind of settle for something that's not who they truly are, or what, you know, what would be their highest and best. So I think that's awesome. So
yeah,
number two
One of the ways to just start, and like I said, we could spend an entire hour on this, but it's just to write down 10 things. What do I want? And just write down 10 things, any things. What do I want? And then ask again. What do I really want? And look at each of those 10 and write another 10. and do it again and again until you get to the essence of what calls you. And so there's lots of wonderful programs to help with identifying mission. And there's some online programs, too. So that's the first agreement, is to live your mission. Again, it's not about achieving it, which is fine. But this agreement is about, once you have a mission, like, let's say I have a friend who had a mission to have a children's camp someday, and she was really working hard in the sales arena to earn the money to buy this property. And while she was working hard, she was not doing anything with children at all. So if she had stopped to say, why do I want a children's camp? What is it about children that I want to support? She might have been able to build into her day or week some time with children, so she was fulfilled now instead of waiting until her mission was accomplished. Does that make sense?
That's fantastic, because, you know, a lot of us, you know, we have a vision or, you know, a dream of what we might want to be and do, but then we have the day job that pays the mortgage and the rent. So that's great advice, that no matter where you are, what you're doing, figure out what you really want about that dream, and then how can you start building that in small ways in your life today.
Yes, and then we have fulfillment today instead of angst and frustration about not getting there and not getting there and not getting there. We're already there.
So, I love this. Okay, so what's our number two step
here? The second agreement in truth is I agree to speak my truth with compassion. Now, that really has to do with when we're asked a question, to be honest in our answer and be honest in a way that has the well-being of the other person as well as yourself in your mind and your heart. Mm-hmm. That's all that means. So I'll move on if I'm going to cover all 12 in the first half hour.
Right.
So then in truth, the third is I agree to look within when I react.
Okay, now you could have done a whole book on this one. This is so rich. I really want you to go into this.
Well, I do want to share with you how this one became so valuable to me. And my mother-in-law was visiting some many years ago, and one evening she said something that I perceived as so mean and manipulative that I had a disproportionate reaction to what she said. I couldn't stop thinking about it. I couldn't sleep at night. I just needed to get away. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what to do. And I was telling a friend of mine who was visiting about it, and she was a psychologist. She said, well, I can help you with this. I said, thank you, because I'm just beside myself with how I'm feeling. I mean, I had such strong negative feelings. She said, well, I can help you if you're willing to take a look at yourself. And that made me stop. It's like, look at me? What does this have to do with me?
Right.
And she said, well, have you ever been, do you think of yourself sometimes as mean or manipulative, or have you ever been, can you remember a time when you were mean or manipulative? And at first I said, no, I'm not. I'm thoughtful, I'm kind. But then she said, now think back. Did you ever have a time when you were mean? And right away I could think of, well, yeah, to my mother, especially as a teenager.
Right.
And she said, well, how does that make you feel? I said, well, not very good. I mean, she was doing the best that she could, and, man, I made it really hard for her. And mm-hmm. then she said, what about manipulative? I had to go back to my early 20s when I was thrown into this management position over 40 people who were all older than me, and the only way I knew to get things done was a little bit of manipulation here and there. She said, how mm-hmm. does that make you feel? Well, I was embarrassed, and I didn't feel good. She said, well, it could be that you have these unresolved feelings about when you were mean or manipulative, and your mother-in-law triggered those. So it's not really about her. It's about what's unresolved in you. Wow. Bingo. It was true. And I said, well, what do I do? She said, well, you don't have to do anything. Once you recognize that it's not about her, it's about you, your relationship is intact, and you can do whatever you want. You can forgive yourself. You can just say, well, that's the way it was. But it's about your relationship with her will be intact. And she was right. The next day, the trigger was gone. That feeling was gone. It wasn't about her. It was about me. And I'm going to tell you, Eleanor, I think 99% is too small of a percentage of times when I'm triggered, when I have a disproportionate reaction to what somebody says or does, that it's not about me. It is about me all the time. And I
would
guess that's true for everybody.
Wow, that's amazing, because we all have those trigger points, and I'm thinking now as you're talking, what are my own times when, like, my daughter will do something and I go, ooh, you know, it kind of sets me off. But you're right, it's like the incident may be at a level 2 and my response is at a level 8. Like, why is that? So, I'm thinking now, you're talking about, I do that with my daughter. It bothers me a lot that she's very messy, and I like things to be very neat. And when she's very messy, I get agitated and go, oh, we want a clean, nice living space in our home. And then I realize, like, well, where am I messy? Or, you know, and look at that pile of papers on my desk that I haven't filed. And I go, oh, there we go. So I love this one. And if we all could understand that when we do get reactive, when we get triggered by someone, to just take a minute and think about what is in me that I'm reacting to here.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's another one with family. When I'm eating well, I don't criticize my husband as much about what he's eating. I get triggered when he's eating whatever it is he's eating that I think he shouldn't eat. But that's when I'm eating what I believe I shouldn't eat. When I'm eating for my good, for my health, it doesn't seem to come up for me about him, because it's really not about him, it's about me. Okay, moving on.
Fantastic.
Excuse me. So the fourth one in truth is, I agree to keep doing what works and change what doesn't. Now, it really helps to know how the brain works to do this. It's very doable to change our habits. I know because I've done it. And if we have time later, I will share how I've done it, because this is so powerful to be able to change something that's not working for us. And sometimes we can't change the circumstance, but we can always change what we think about it. In fact,
right.
I can't move on without
that's
telling
great. And
story.
As you know, and some of our listeners know, that's my theme song is Building on What Works. And wrote
right.
a whole book about the breakthrough solutions of what's working in different fields. So I love this agreement.
Thank you. Well, you know, I think I won't move on without telling you this little story, and then we'll just zoom through the rest.
Okay.
So I had a colleague. We worked together. We did the same work. And one day she said to me, isn't our work just so much fun and easy and rewarding? And I said, well, it is fun because we get to work together and we get to work with other friends too. Definitely rewarding. We were actually saving people's lives and we were getting paid very well to do it. But easy? I said, no, I don't get that it's easy. It's hard. And she said, really? You think it's hard? And I said, you really think it's easy? She said, well, yeah. Well, I went away from that conversation and I thought about it and I realized I have a habit. My whole life I've had a habit of saying that work is hard. You know, I've always loved my work, everything I've done, but it's always been hard. And then I thought about how my father was a hard worker and it was all about hard work and doing hard work. And I thought, well, if we do the same job, I want to think it's easy. I want work to be easy now. I want everything to be easy. So the next morning, I woke up and I remember opening the sliding glass door and it went whoosh, and I said out loud, well, that was easy. And then I went into the kitchen, I cracked an egg in a pan and it was a beautiful egg, and I said, well, that was easy. And all day long I kept programming a new thought. Every time I saw something that was easy, I said, that was easy, that was easy, that was easy, that was easy. I wrote a blog about it at one point, and one of the people who read the blog sent me this button that said, that was easy. It's from Staples. And so I had this man's voice then telling
wow,
me
that's
also
great.
That was easy. And everything became easier, Eleanor. It worked, so mm-hmm. I know it works.
Wow,
yeah.
That's really something. So that's the four agreements under the area of truth. And now
yes.
you have a second set of the next four agreements under the area of acceptance. Tell us about those.
Okay. So acceptance starts with, I agree to listen with my heart. And that means listening with your whole being so that the other person can feel heard. We all like to feel heard. In fact, we are expanded by being heard.
Mm-hmm.
So it requires practice to stop listening with judgment. Like, what you just said is wrong and I'm right. Or, oh my goodness, I could help fix that or fix you. So listening with your heart is different. Listening with your heart is listening so the other person can feel heard. That's it.
So how do we listen with heart? So, you know, I work a lot in the area of politics and government and kind of listening a lot to political speeches or elections or all of that good stuff. You know, what does it mean to listen with heart when we're looking in that arena?
Well, that means being open to learning something new.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it means to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to be talking about this in the second half, and I have a
right.
brother who is different from me in almost every way, and one of the ways is politically, and I have learned so much from him by listening and asking questions. That's all.
Mm.
That's all
interesting.
It is.
All right, well,
simple,
we're going
actually.
To come back to this one when we talk about bridging the partisan divide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the next one in acceptance is, I agree to respect our differences. Well, that would take a whole hour, Eleanor. I'm just going to move on and finish the acceptance ones.
And how connected is that? If you're listening with your heart, then you kind of automatically are respecting our differences, huh?
Well, and you just said something so valuable, because honestly, if one practices any one of these agreements, they eventually lead to all of them, which makes it easy. It's like, oh my gosh, 12 new things to do? No. Pick the one that speaks to you, that says, if you practice me, your life is going to feel better. And when you practice that one, the other ones will just start coming naturally.
That is fascinating.
Yeah. So the third one in acceptance is, I agree to resolve conflicts directly. And directly means directly with the person with whom we have the conflict. And directly means as soon as possible. So this,
we put up a sign, no gossip allowed.
I'm sorry, go ahead. This is
no,
the one
keep
in the
going.
Workplace that is so important, because the rumor mill can be very vicious. And, of course, in politics, too, actually. So resolving conflicts directly. And then there's, of course, there's a whole study around how to resolve conflicts. And we could touch on that a little bit if we want to in the second half. And the fourth one is, I agree to honor our choices. This one's pretty interesting. What this means,
what
is...
What does honor our choices mean?
Honor
the choices I make? Honor my choices?
Yes. Your choices and the choices of others. And here's why. Eleanor, do you ever make a choice consciously with the thought, I think I'll make this choice and it's going to be really bad for me?
Never.
No, of course not. At the moment we make a choice or a decision, in that moment, with everything that led up to that moment, all our experiences, whatever's happening in the moment, we make the choice that we think is best in that moment. Now, looking back, we might say, well, that was a mistake. But instead of being self-critical, which is, there's so much time and energy spent in self-criticism, or for that matter, in criticizing others for their choices, we can just say, well, that doesn't work, and go back to an earlier agreement and change what's not working.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, and it reminds me somewhat of the wonderful work done at the Option Institute in Massachusetts, where they basically say everyone is doing the best they can given who they are and what they've experienced. And if you can understand that that's a real profound truth, then you can have total acceptance of yourself and of other people.
Yes, and that's true. And I would add, and what our life's path is. Because when we get to the political side of things, that's what has helped me to, this is the area of acceptance, this is what has helped me to accept that people are in their proper positions doing what they're supposed to be doing here. And then for me, because of my mission, I always ask the question, well, what is mine to do, instead of getting dragged into the drama? Or as soon as I feel myself getting dragged into the drama, I pop up and I go, well, what is mine to do? And that moves me back into my mission, instead of spending a lot of time in the talking to others about what's not working with somebody else. You know, if I have something I want to say to the president, I can write, at least, get it off my chest and write to the president. It's not going to help for me to be talking to my neighbors necessarily, especially the ones who think exactly the way I do.
Right.
So, gratitude.
Excellent.
Eleanor, should we move to gratitude?
Yes. You know, each one of these, it's such a gem. I feel like these 12 agreements here, it's like a diamond, and you're looking at the different facets of diamond, that they're all brilliant, they're all such gems, and also essential. But, you know, where are we with gratitude? I love that comment. I forget who it comes from now. I think it was Rumi, the poet, who once said, if the only prayer I ever said was thank you, it would be enough.
Yes. And that's the first agreement in gratitude, is I agree to give and receive thanks. And what I've noticed, Eleanor, in our programs is that people are generally good at giving thanks and not so good at receiving it. And
is that
the people
true?
Who can receive it actually also are also good at receiving other things, like love, like money. So we could practice receiving appreciation more by opening to it and breathing it in.
So what do you think it is in so many people that makes it hard for them to receive thanks?
Well, I think giving thanks is kind of drilled into us as children, a lot of us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember hearing a parent say, what do you say?
Right.
Thank you.
With that tone of voice, even.
Right. So I think it's kind of, we get a lot of practice saying thank you, but we don't get taught how to receive appreciation.
Mm.
And, you know, Eleanor, when you thank somebody, when you are appreciating somebody, don't you want them to get it, to feel it, to embody it?
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the giving. You know, giving a gift, you want somebody to receive it. So
right. And I've noticed that particularly with a lot of women, and not just about receiving thanks, but receiving compliments on, you know, you look beautiful, or that's a nice dress, or that was well said, something like that. A lot of women tend to kind of deflect it, and they won't take in the compliment.
Yes, and those same women know how to give compliments.
Oh,
and
yes,
they want
streams,
them to be received,
rivers of
so
giving,
can remember that,
gratitude and then, compliments.
Yeah, then we can turn it around and receive so that the other's gift of appreciation is fully, is complete in this circle.
I think that's great. And one of the things I say to my friends when I see it happening is to say, well, you know, I'm trying to give you, or this person is trying to give you a gift. And when you deflect it like that, you're not allowing that person to give you the gift. Mm-hmm. So, you know, please allow the person to give you the gift and accept it.
Yes, and then when you practice it, or when I should talk about me, because when I practiced doing that to learn how to receive more, oh, it really feels good. It feels really good. It feels loving. And, you know, we need more love in this world.
Absolutely.
So,
and then,
to wrap up,
of course,
shall
now
I wrap
we're
up
on
gratitude
to
before that?
The next agreement,
yeah.
Is totally
so be the best in myself and others.
The flip side
we're
of the giving
about
and receiving
that, I think,
thanks.
In the second half quite a bit. So I'm going to move on to, I agree to look for blessings in disguise.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose for looking, really looking back at things that were maybe tragedies or difficulties and saying, were there any blessings from that? I mean,
mm-hmm.
Can you think of one right now, Eleanor? You don't have to speak it, but something that was
yeah,
difficult.
My friend Betty Lynn, yes? Is just incredible. She's like a living angel. And I'm here in Seattle, and she's just set up all these amazing meetings with these wonderful people here, and I just feel so blessed.
Yes, and this is not in disguise, but in disguise might be something that looks difficult. And so when we're in difficulties, to know that someday it may be revealed what the blessing is from that difficulty. So, you know, the practice is looking back at things that were hard that turned out to be blessings. And the final one is I agree to lighten up. I agree to lighten up.
Yes. Well, on the blessings in disguise, by the way, I think that's, I have a joke with one of my friends when things come up. We go, oh my God, this feels so traumatic. It feels terrible. How could this happen? This is awful. And then immediately shift it to, oh, thank you, another growth opportunity.
Yeah, perfect. And that serves for the last agreement, too. That serves to lighten up, right?
Yes, exactly, to lighten up. Terrific. All right, well, that, what you've laid out to me, is a set of 12 principles you could live your life by. And as you've talked about people that you know who, you know, tape these 12 agreements on the ceiling above their bed, so it's the last thing they see every day and the first thing they see in the morning when they wake up, and or read it every morning on your own, or maybe get a group of people that you connect with once a month or once a week that you're kind of doing this, or your workmates, just to really make these practices. These are not like intellectual frameworks to think about. This is actually a framework for living your life and to live the agreements.
Yes, absolutely. And some of my students have said that this, let's see, one of my students said, this is like how you do the golden rule. And another one said, this is a structure for him for being the change he wishes to see in the world. And so, and another one has made it the constitution for his business. That's what he calls it, the constitution for his business. So there's all kinds of ways to apply this. And, you know, it's they are used in all their developmental stages. They're being used around the world and in many, many different venues, from businesses to nonprofits to conference programs and, you know, individuals' homes. And really, there isn't a place where these couldn't be and probably are. Oh, and I see the posters. You're talking about the poster of the agreement that was above somebody's bed. I see the posters in healthcare reception rooms, clinic reception rooms. You know, I see them around. It's good.
Wow, fantastic. Well, what an amazing gift that you have co-created these agreements with your group that met for 20 years and that you've written the book and you're out speaking about it and helping all of us, you know, create a tool that helps us live our lives to be our highest and best. So you've done it, and thank you.
You're
and
welcome.
I want to move now
too,
into
Eleanor. It's not,
talking about...
I mean, I've been practicing these for 30 years.
Bridging,
but you know,
the partisan divide, in our, particularly in our families. And we've had this now, this Democrat versus Republican battle has gotten so acrimonious. And in my own family, it's like my husband's family really is split. They used to have a Christmas party every year, and everybody would come. And we knew, of course, you know, people had different views, but it was kind of set aside, and we focused on family and the holidays and how are your kids. But when Trump came in and everything just seemed to really accelerate in a bad way in terms of intensifying the hostility on the divide, it kind of got to the point where, like, well, you know what, we're not going to do that anymore. We're not going to have that family party. So I am eager to hear, because we have Thanksgiving coming up next week. People will be getting together with family members that they don't see often. Maybe Thanksgiving or the holidays is maybe the only time they see them. But when they get together, it's like, oh, my God, it's like the Civil War of the United States political system is playing out in our living rooms and our dining room tables. So what do you say that could help our listeners when we're in that situation? How do we draw on these 12 agreements to help us bridge that partisan divide in our families?
Yeah, I'm so glad we're addressing this, Eleanor. This is so important. First of all, most of the work, much of the work, can be done without even being with the other person. That's good news. So I'd say that there's some preparation perhaps needed. And I say that because relationships can be enhanced when one person says, let's say the agreement, there's many agreements we can pull on, but I didn't get into, I agree to see the best in myself and others. Let's use that one.
Okay.
For a minute. And I'm going to tell you how this one saved my marriage, and then we can apply it to the political situation. So there was a year, let's see, my husband and I were celebrating our 24th wedding anniversary, and I was aware that over the previous year, I had been very critical of him. He had taken over a business that I had built to a very, it was a very good business, very profitable, and he had taken it over and so that I could write this book, this Revolutionary Agreements book, and I didn't like the way he was running it. And I just started complaining all the time about what I saw, what I didn't see him do. And it started spilling over into other areas of our lives. I was just tense all the time and so judgmental and critical. And on our 24th wedding anniversary, I had this thought that if something didn't change, we were not going to have a 25th wedding anniversary. It just felt that bad. So the next day, as soon as I had that thought, it's like the next day, what appears is this small blank journal, gratitude journal book. And I thought, well, I could practice what I preach. I could take this little journal and sit and every day And now this, I'm suggesting, think about this for loved ones, people you'd like to be in relationship with, but you're not right now in the relationship you want. I sat every day without him knowing, and I would write one thing that I liked about him. One thing that I loved about him. One thing that I saw that was the best in him. One thing I was grateful for. Just one. Just it took less than a minute. Not the first day, because the first day I couldn't actually think of one.
Oh, my God. That shows how bad it was.
That's right. But then every day it got easier. And by the end, honestly, by the end of the first week, I was in love again. It didn't take long. I wrote for 121 days. And
wow.
I ended up giving him that little journal on our 25th wedding anniversary. And this year we're celebrating our 33rd. So it's been
congratulations.
So this is what I do with my brother, who I mentioned in the first half of our show. So my brother and
I are
very
different. Before you go into your brother, what happened? Did you tell your husband about this journal?
Oh, I gave it to him. I gave him the journal for our, it was a surprise, for our 25th wedding anniversary.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Oh, my God. And how did he react?
Oh, he loved it. In fact, we move around quite a bit. I mean, we live in a number of places, and he always has it on his night table.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, now you're making me cry. That's wonderful.
Yeah. It's it was so powerful. And honestly, Eleanor, since I did that journal, it's only gotten better, because now it's the way I live with him. I see the best in him. I have so many examples of that. Look within when I react is another one that's internal. So I used to get upset with him when he was late.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, that's not look within. That's a different one. Let me just tell you this one, because this is the best. This is also seeing the best. So one time I asked, well, what's the best about him that has to do with being late? And it's because he's very present. He is very, very present with whomever he's with, and wherever he is, which is a really fabulous quality. In fact, it was one I aspired to. So whenever I would go, you know, come on, and I'd start feeling frustrated, I would kind of shift my thinking to what's the best about that behavior is that he's really right here, right now, with whatever he's doing. What a gift. So it's very powerful. This is the most powerful agreement in recent years. See the best. So people can start working on that, you know, cousin, whoever it is. What's the best in that person? What do I love about them? What memories do I have of us being together? You know, for my brother and I meet on one plane, and that's with my mother. My mother is over 100 years old, and one of the reasons she is that my brother and I are dedicated to her having the highest quality of life for the longest period of time possible. It is where we meet. But the way to do that, we have very different opinions about. We just hang in with each other because the result is always better than what either of us could do alone. We know that. But I have to see, you know, he's thoughtful, he's loyal. There are so many good qualities that he has. So I focus on what's best about him. I don't focus on the things that I disagree with and don't like. That's all. And occasionally I say, well, we'll have to agree to disagree on that. But you know what, Eleanor, I have to be honest here. Sometimes he'll say, well, I don't want to. Because he would rather be right.
Mm.
And sometimes I would rather be right too. I have to, you know, I'm not.
Well, always. Not, I mean, we always want to be right. Well,
but
this gets into the thing in the partisan divide where you go, well, I see this person, but they're just saying these either very racist things or very judgmental things or very ill-informed things or things that are just flat out not true. They're like fantasy world coming out of Fox News or something like that. And you look at that and you're going, how could anyone believe that. So then you begin to think that can't be a very smart or good person who's just mouthing what they're hearing on Fox News, even though it's a complete lie. So how do I deal with that?
You start looking at the best in that person.
Okay, so we have to change.
And stay focused, on that. Because mm-hmm. and then also you might check within and say, well, what's going on for me about this? You know, what does this behavior have to do with me? Because we can look at things we don't like and know we don't like that and we don't agree with that. But to have a disproportionate reaction, to be like we can't sleep about it, we're crazed about it, it's taking over our lives, then mm-hmm. there's something going on inside of us mm-hmm. that has to do with that. So back to that one, I agree to look within when I react. And some of it, Eleanor, is just letting go of needing to be right. It's like, what would we rather do? For me, I want to have a relationship with my brother because it serves my mother to do that, for one thing. And it serves us, too, mm-hmm. you know, to have a loving relationship, even if we are so different in so many ways. And I mean, we have different ideas about, like, he believes in the medical model. He's always mm-hmm. running to the doctors and thinks we should take mom to the emergency room and this and that. And I'm more holistic and more preventative in my thinking. So we both moved, actually, a little more towards the center. Mm-hmm. Because I can't say we respect our differences, but we respect each other's humanity. You know, it's, I agree to respect our differences. Sometimes it's just, I respect that you're another human being, another cell in this body of humanity. And so mm-hmm. you must have something to offer because you're here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's fascinating, this whole thing of letting go of needing to be right. You know, I have a sister and she says, you know, the three words people most want to hear are not really, I love you, but you are right. And that is, it's such a deep sense of satisfaction. I go, yes, I am right.
Yeah, and if so that's what you want, good. But if you want a relationship, maybe that's something to let go of.
Right. You got to want the relationship more than you want to be right.
Yes.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. Was anything else as we head into Thanksgiving week we need to know? Clearly, I love this, you know, focus on the best that's in them and kind of let go of the rest.
Yes. Let go of the rest. Just, I mean, you can be there to hear it. You can listen. Mm-hmm. And maybe, actually, for me, I learn something when I listen to Stephen. And sometimes it's just I learn that he listens to Fox News. You know, that's what I learn. And you know what? Mm-hmm. I listen to other news, and that's where I get my news. And so isn't that fascinating that we reflect the news that we listen to? So it becomes more of a fascination, more of a curiosity, more how interesting, rather than combative. Yeah.
Mm. Wow, I love that. Shift from, it's like almost like an cultural review or or learning an adventure, as opposed to they're idiots and they're wrong.
Well, I love that adventure, Eleanor. Oh, it's an adventure to learn how people think and what builds our perspectives. You know, anymore, mm-hmm. I see there are as many truths as there are perspectives. There are. There's, mm-hmm. you know, no capital T truth for me right now in most things because people have different perspectives and we can have, as you say, an adventure being curious about those perspectives and where they come from, but not from a judgmental place. Where does that come from? But, oh, how interesting. How interesting.
Well, that's fantastic. You've given us our guide to peace in our families over the holidays. And so here's our mission, listeners. When we show up at our family gatherings, see the best in ourselves and the others who are present. And think of it as an adventure, that you're talking with people who you may never talk to the rest of the year or many other time, but it's an adventure to learn about, isn't this fascinating? This is how this person thinks, and I think completely differently about it, and of course I'm based in fact and they're not, but it's an adventure for me to learn that this is how they're thinking and let go of it. Is that a fair summary?
Well, I might leave off the last few words.
Yes, I know. I couldn't resist slipping that in. See how tied we are to that, these habits of wanting to be right.
Yes.
Well, fantastic. Now, the other arena, as you talked about, is most people live most of their lives in a work setting, at least, you know, until they retire or whatever. But and even then, people are now involved in social change organizations or, you know, nonprofits and engaging as volunteers. So in the work setting, you know, talk about people of different views mm-hmm. coming together. And it can create a lot of conflict and misunderstanding and discomfort. So how do you see we can apply these 12 revolutionary agreements in our work settings?
Yeah, Eleanor, I had a personal experience of this when I was with an organization. We were having a meeting of the leadership, and there were probably a couple of hundred of us. And wow, we were getting into a fight about, I don't remember what it was. It was many years ago. And Glenn and I spoke and said, should we offer the agreements? We said, well, it can't hurt. I mean, it's getting worse. So we offered the agreements, and it gave everybody a focal point of values to rally around, and it shifted the whole energy, and we were able to move forward differently. So that, wow, that was big. Then there's one of the Geneva Group members has taken the agreements out into business, into corporations, and she was working with one that's a Fortune 50, and it was he was the director of the operations division. He was really having a hard time and thinking that he was going to have to change careers, you know, move on. He was in he said his core team, the core of the organization, was non-functional. Well, she gave him a copy of the Revolutionary Agreements book that he read over the weekend and came back in, like, renewed on Monday, and then asked management if she could do a session with his team, which she did. And she guided them to create their own set of agreements, which I think was brilliant. And they did that. And I heard from him 7 months later and said that to say that they had a turnaround would be an understatement. They were highly functioning, making tremendous differences within the whole organization. And so that's another way to do it. What she does is she offers the Geneva Group agreements and many other agreements that she's worked with over the years, and the revolutionary agreements, and then guides them to create their own. It's really a great idea. So, and then back in the late 80s, I guess it was, Glenn and I were called into Washington to help with the Soviet American Citizens Summit, which was taking place in February of 89. At the time that the core group that was planning this summit came together, the Cold War was still raging. But by the time the summit occurred, Reagan had met with Gorbachev. So it was perfect timing. They had a huge goal. They were bringing the largest team of Soviet citizens, high-level citizens, cosmonauts, award-winning filmmakers and writers, doctors who had invented things that were being used all over the world, very high-level citizens, to come to the United States and meet with their counterparts in their areas of interest, and so that they could create joint projects together that would serve our nations and the world. Very, very noble purpose. So Glenn and I arrived in Washington 3 months before the event was to happen, and we were told we aren't going to make it. It's falling apart. We went around, we talked to each person on the team to find out what was happening. Everybody was stressed out. They were a magnificent group of individuals, but the deadlines, the finances, the big mission, everything that was looming, it was just not working. So we took them off site for a day, and we went through the revolutionary agreement, starting with, I agree to live my mission. And bingo, Eleanor, there it was. Their mission was to create a forum in which these former enemies of state could collaborate to create something beautiful together. Well, as a team, they were not living that mission. Right? They were not collaborating in a way that was beautiful, as Buckminster Fuller would say about solutions. You know, if it's not beautiful, something's wrong. So we went through the entire list of 12 agreements over that day, ending with Lighten Up, which we really needed by then, and starting the next morning, right, starting the next morning for the next 3 months, we sat in circle, read the agreements aloud, and then anybody was welcome to share anything that every single person in the circle needed to know to go to do their work for the day. We did that, and then we split up, and everybody was in such alignment that things started working so smoothly. Everything got done. The summit was a huge success, birthing hundreds of projects between our nations, that some of which are still going on these many years later. So the agreements can be used to help align teams. I think of movements like Indivisible, other movements could use agreements like these or their own agreements at the core team and then share it with whoever connects into the movement. These are revolutionary agreements, Eleanor. That means they can change our paradigm. And they do change, personally, my paradigm from the environment around me of so much negativity to one of possibility and positivity.
Fantastic. Well, that's exactly what we need right now. So that's awesome. And what do you think? Is that the model that people kind of take some time to really go deeply to understand, here's the 12 revolutionary agreements, and then to meet daily and review it? Or how have you seen it applied practically? Say if Indivisible wanted to do this, what would they do?
Well, the core team, whatever team is the glue, would use it on a regular basis, maybe to start off their meetings too. But first, really to go deeply into each one and choose the ones that speak to them or create their own. And then use those to align. And then if it feels right, share them with on the website, share them with everybody. If they feel that it could make a difference in aligning the teams and in our own personal development and our ability to be as creative as possible. So, and I've had teams, businesses that have had focus on one agreement a month. So they'll put an agreement up on the wall, and that month everybody's focused on that agreement. There's 12 agreements, 12 months, that works. There are teams that meet by phone or by Zoom, and they read the agreements aloud at the beginning of their meetings. So, you know, it depends on who they are, what works for that particular team.
Yeah, and it's the kind of things I would think once you've gone deeply in it and really get what each of the agreements is about, that you're only talking maybe, 5 minutes to review it?
Well, if you just read them, it's 1 minute.
1 minute, there you go.
If if you just read, and we do it like we alternate. So if we're sitting in a circle or we're sitting in a large room, whatever, one person reads the first one, somebody else reads the second one, somebody else reads the third one, always with the words, I agree to, before it. We're speaking for each other, but by speaking it aloud, you know, it puts it into the field. And again, this isn't about these agreements. It's about agreements that reflect your values. So if these are helpful, great. If not, create your own.
Fantastic. Well, you've come up with an amazing framework here. And to think if we just took that 1 minute a day to have a life of greater joy and harmony and a more happy Thanksgiving, how, what a wonderful contribution you've made. So thank you so much for doing that. And how do people get in touch with you and learn more about what you do?
Well, they can go to revolutionaryagreements.com. where they'll see the Agreements Institute, where I have certified coaches to take Revolutionary Agreements programs out into the world. And there's a store with the book and the poster. You, too, can have a poster over your bed. And, yeah, what else? There was something else. Oh, yeah, in the second edition, I want to be clear that there was a second edition of this book written in 2015 that has a new chapter with agreements that have been written by businesses and nonprofits and so on that might be valuable to some people. So the second edition is updated with stories from readers of the first edition and how they've applied the agreements. So be sure to look for the second edition. The subtitle of the second edition is A Personal Path to Peace on Earth.
I love it, and I encourage listeners, it's a fabulous book. I encourage our listeners to get that book, Revolutionary Agreements, read it and apply it in your life. That's all the time we have. Marion Head, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.